There is no greater pain than a parent burying a child. Add to that the fear of a widow in the time of Jesus burying her only son, a fear of what the future would look like for her. Would she end up begging at the city gates or become like an indentured servant to one of her kinsmen who would take her in because it is what the law required? It didn't matter from which side you viewed this woman. It was hard, and it was deeply sad. If this were a stage play, I believe the only light on the stage would be on this woman following her son's coffin out the city gates to his final resting place in the cemetery. We can sense the crowds of people, but they are in the shadows, and we don't hear from them. But then Jesus steps into this spotlight with the widow and the casket. She doesn't say anything. He says, "Do not cry," which under any other circumstances would be one of the least effective things that could be said. Of course she's going to cry. Frankly, I'm surprised that she can even walk to the cemetery. But Jesus isn't done. He then steps toward the casket and touches it, and the pallbearers stand still. Imagine this all still in that spotlight. There isn't a sound until Jesus speaks. "Young man, I say to you, rise." The dead man sits up and speaks, and Jesus gives him to his mother. It is then that the rest of the stage is lit, and all the mourners and the disciples are both seen and heard. They're like a Greek chorus. We're told that they were gripped with fear and they glorified God. Imagine that mixture of emotions. For they recognized Jesus as a great prophet, one whose word was from God. And they knew God had visited the people. This resurrection story, and that's what it is often overlooked. Perhaps because it's only a few verses compared to Lazarus, which is quite the tale with Martha and Mary. Perhaps it's because the people in it are all nameless, in a town that we're not even exactly sure where it is. And Jesus apparently has no relationship with them. It's also not the first resurrection story. Tom read to you from 1 Kings about how the prophet Elijah raised a widow's son, a story that would be familiar to Luke's first readers. All of which should remind us that God is about resurrection, and that God has a special place for widows of that day and all those on the margins, those who are overlooked. Jesus also noticed the overlooked, a tax collector up in a tree, a sick woman touching the hem of his garment, a blind man being shushed by the disciples at the city gates, children being brought to him for a blessing. These are the ones Jesus was drawn to, more than to the virtuous and pious church folk. The nameless widow of Nain was holding both grief and fear, and Jesus handed her hope. It's what he did with many people on the edges of the crowds. She didn't ask for anything. He saw her in her anonymity, in her invisibility, and his heart opened with compassion, we're told. Jesus saw people the world did not. Now, just before this episode, there's one involving two other nameless people. This must be the chapter of anonymity. A centurion's slave had fallen ill. And hearing about this, Jesus asked to come and heal the slave. The centurion had been a friend to the Hebrew people, making possible the building of their temple, even though it was not his religion. Jesus is headed to the centurion's home when messengers come with a message from the centurion that he believes that he is not worthy to have Jesus under his roof. But all Jesus would need to do is say the word right where he is, and his slave would be healed. He did not consider himself worthy to ask anything of Jesus, and yet he had such faith in him that he believed just a word would heal his beloved slave. Jesus had a heart for those who were in despair or fear or desperation, those whose lives went by unnoticed by others or judged unworthy by others. While others looked away, Jesus was drawn to them, and he looked them in the eye and gave them hope, gave them acceptance and forgiveness to hold. You know, fear is destructive. Despair is a dead-end street, and desperation is that frayed end at the end of our proverbial rope. The good news of this story for us is that Jesus also sees us in those circumstances and in those moments. When we are fearful and grief-stricken, when we feel unseen and unheard, and like the widow of Nain, he reaches out to give us new life. There are all kinds of resurrection stories, and frankly, we need to be telling them. People who are part of 12-step groups hear resurrection stories all the time about how people had hit bottom where fear, despair, and desperation overwhelmed, but they have found new life through sobriety made possible from a power greater than themselves. People who come to Storehouse West with great fear and desperation about how they will feed their families will find new life not only with bags of food, but because people who are there see them and their hearts open with compassion for them. In Kyberian, Cuba, we met people who were afraid for their children because they had cancer, and they were desperate for hope. The people of the Presbyterian Reformed Church in Kyberian saw these families, and their compassion has brought new hope for life for them. These resurrection stories, they're all around us, my friends, if only we look, and we need to be telling them. You see, when Jesus restores the young man's life, he also restores the life of the mother. I can say that because I'm a mother and I know. It reminds us of how interconnected we are. A well spouse often is only doing as well as the one who is ill. Healing of one brings hope and healing to them both. As my family has watched my grandson grow and develop in his own way and at his own pace, his development also develops in us new hope, new learning, as well as gratitude and praise to God, who continues to be at work in his life, who sees him. What Jesus offers is hope. Hope never comes, though, with big egos, thinking ourselves better than others or deserving of this. Nor does it come with hatred of others, nor false promises of security. You see, we can't hold on to hope and hatred or judgment of others. We can't hold on to new life when it's always me and mine first. Our anonymous woman did not ask Jesus for anything. I cannot emphasize that enough. If we don't even know if she saw him in the midst of her fear and grief. It didn't matter whether she asked or not, because Jesus saw her. This is one of my favorite stories because it reminds me to look around in my own life, to look where Jesus might be looking. Who is Jesus being drawn to? Who is Jesus opening my heart to be compassionate to? So often we think about people asking things of Jesus, and yet here he simply reached out because he saw and heard one childless widow's suffering. We're about to come to a table none of us are truly worthy to approach, and yet Jesus invites us, saying, yes, you are included. You are expected at this table, because this table is not at all about being worthy. Judas sat at it along with Peter. Jesus says to us, let go of your fear, your grief, your pain, and come to this table and embrace new life. Here it is all about grace. Here it is all about Jesus coming to us, seeing us, uniting with us, bringing resurrection hope to each of us and all of us. Amen.